Welcome to the You and Me podcast, the show where we dive deep into the beautiful world of weddings. I'm Laura, the founder of Wanderlust Creative, an international wedding planning and styling company servicing a global collective of loved up couples.
And I'm Andy, the founder of The Bridal Journey, a source of inspiration for brides, and Revealed, a wedding marketplace where brides can buy and sell pre-loved wedding items.
In each episode of the You and Me podcast, we sit down with a real bride who openly shares their unique wedding planning journey. From the excitement of the proposal to the magical moments of her wedding day, we delve deep into the emotions, the challenges, and the triumphs of planning a wedding.
Join us as we celebrate love, offer practical advice, and share the experiences of brides just like you.
Prepare for heartfelt conversations and inspiring stories on the You and Me podcast.
Welcome to the podcast, Erin. Now, we've got you on today because I posted a photo on the bridal journey of you at your wedding, obviously, and it received amazing engagement. I think a lot of people really loved the aesthetic and look of your wedding. So we decided that we'll get you on the podcast. So welcome.
Thank you. I'm so flattered and happy to be here.
Great. And we'll just kickstart with just introduce yourself for those who don't know.
Of course. My name's Erin Brennan and I got married recently in March 2023.
Great. So a really recent bride, which is amazing. So we'll just start with our very first question we ask everyone. How did the proposal unfold?
Of course. So James and I had been together for 8 years. We had discussed about getting married. I knew we would get married and be together for the rest of our lives. However, I wasn't aware of when he would propose. So when I organised a boat for my 30th birthday in November 2021, I was taken by complete surprise that at the end of his little speech that he did in front of everyone, he got down on one knee and asked me to marry him. So it was a complete surprise, given he is not the type of guy to do things publicly, and I never really wanted a public proposal. However, it was really nice because it was just friends. It wasn't, you know, in the middle of a restaurant or anything like that. It was just with my closest 25 friends and a couple of family members on a beautiful boat in the northern beaches. So it was amazing. My sister's a photographer, so she managed to get some beautiful photos as well, which we treasure.
Oh, that's amazing, Erin. That's really beautiful. And I think, like, we were just, the last bride that we were just on with as well, Izzy, she had all her family and friends surrounding her for her proposal too. And, you know, I think there's a lot more stories gone of the days of just like this secluded beach proposal with nobody else. Like, so many.
As you said, like, no restaurant. Like, do people get engaged in a restaurant?
Heaps still do.
Do they?
Yeah, people still do those kind of elaborate.
Have you had brides that have been proposed to you in restaurants?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. Like,
I thought
going
that was
just
like a movie type thing.
No, people really do it all the time.
I have never known anyone to
get
in. Have we interviewed? I feel like we have not interviewed anyone on the podcast.
I don't know. That's a long time.
So
I've got to remember back. Yeah, it happens.
We might have to do a poll.
Yeah.
Did you get proposed to in
and
a restaurant?
And did you enjoy it? Because it's like, you know, this is the thing.
I seriously would love that.
In a restaurant?
Yes.
Yeah. No
and
way.
Like, people would probably shout you champagne and I don't know. I would probably really love that. I'm a bit of a freak.
Do you know what? A boat on Sydney Harbour sounds fab though.
Yes, it does. Well, I mean.
So Erin, describe. So, you know, you're recently married this year, but you just said you were engaged in 2021. So talk us through, you know, the couple year gap, what kickstarted your planning journey and how you kind of came about that.
Yeah. So not long after we got engaged, it hit me that I actually have to plan a wedding now, which, even though it's quite logical, the wedding planning comes after the engagement, I was all caught up in the romance of just being proposed to, which was super nice. But then once I started to think about the type of wedding that I wanted, I knew I wanted it to be mostly outside if the weather permitted. I wanted it to feel homey and welcoming. And I love gardens. I love being outside. So that was front of mind for me. And that kind of led us down the path of looking at the wedding venue that we looked at, and I had it saved in my phone for a couple of years after seeing a beautiful wedding that had happened there. So for me, it happened all really organically, and it started with the venue, and I think it just started to take shape from there. I think once you lock in the venue, the rest kind of unfolds, and well, at least that's how it happened for me.
And what was the wedding venue for the listeners?
It was Summerlee's in Sutton Forest in the Southern Highlands.
Yeah, beautiful venue.
And so, Erin, tell me, with, you know, mentioning organically that the suppliers then follow, and you mentioned your sister's a photographer, so there could be a little in there for some recommendations as well. But did your venue have a recommended supplier list that you could draw down on, or had you saved suppliers like you saved the venue and had a bit more of an idea of what you wanted before anyway?
Yes, great question. So they did have a little black book, which was super helpful. The owner of Summerlee, Nadine, has perfect taste, and I completely aligned with everything that she did. So when she handed over that little black book after we'd reserved the venue, I came across some amazing vendors. One in particular was the caterer, who were incredible, the Blonde Butler, who I'd heard of before. They do lots of Sydney events. And I thought they were super, super expensive. So it was nice to see that they weren't really for weddings. So that is where I found the Blonde Butler and locked them in. So that little black book did help a lot, and you take comfort in knowing that the venue's worked with them before.
And in terms of working with that venue, did you then have to bring in a lot of supply, like bring in a caterer and things like that? Was it just simply like a bare-boned type? Because I haven't been there myself, but I've seen lots of weddings there, and it seems like it's just kind of a house, isn't it? Have you been there? Yeah, is it, so you have to bring in most of your vendors into that?
Yeah, you got to bring all your vendors.
Yeah, right.
You do. Yes, you do. So that, I think, turns a lot of people off. However, I think the really cool thing that we were able to lean on was our caterer, the Blonde Butler, do all your glassware, all your plates, all your cutlery, all your napkins, tablecloths. They serve alcohol for an additional fee. They bring ice, and then they take it all away at the end. So I've had friends who've had to hire plates and glassware, and it's actually a nightmare. So that is something I didn't want to do. So when looking at caterers and comparing them, I made sure that the one I booked did all of that as well, because it is so annoying having lots of different vendors, and that just took that stress out of it.
I think people would be shocked to know that the provisions that you just described for a catering company is not common.
No.
So in Australia, that's actually not common. In Europe, a lot of big catering companies provide everything. Some of them even provide tables and chairs as well, which is a full set and forget kind of approach. But in Australia, having a catering company, there are some catering companies that don't even provide cutlery. So it's one of these things.
A lot don't, would they? Yeah. They just simply provide the food. And I think that's where the challenge is, isn't it?
It's
just, if people don't have a wedding planner, they hire a caterer, and then they don't
serve it.
And it's the whole bump in, bump out, which a planner would take, like you would take care of that. But I think when people plan their own weddings off a site, like a venue where you have to bring that stuff in, I don't think they anticipate that you do have to bring your linen in, but then you've got to return it. Sometimes you have to return it clean.
Yeah.
The next day within like 24 hours. So you've got to find someone or do it yourself, like drive back to wherever you got it from, bring it back in bulk, go to the venue in the morning on the Sunday.
What a joke.
Collect all the linen, collect all the cutlery. I've heard like a horror story of a friend who did her wedding in Perth, didn't realize, and all the guests and the bridal party on the Sunday, I think they stayed up to 4 or 5. At 9 a.m., we're washing. They had literally like a tub of chains, and we're washing the cutlery, washing, packing it all up, and then had to like find someone to like they didn't actually realize the work that goes into. So to find someone like the Blonde Butler who caters to all of that is really good.
I think that's a massive tip, right? Read your terms and conditions, people, because all those exclusions will be in
or
there.
Get a planner that saves you money, this or picks it up and takes it back for
you. But if
you
don't have
day.
Like an amazing venue who has got somebody on site, like Nadine, did you say it was?
Yeah, so Nadine wasn't really on site. They had someone else on site, okay, who was awesome. But yeah, even then, she wouldn't have been washing plates and things like that.
No, no. But at least leaning on them to know that they're sending you suppliers that cover you and don't create more work for you is really good, you know, for you guys. Unless you plan them, or unless you're in the industry, you're never going to ask a caterer if they provide their own plates, are you?
I wonder if anyone's ever been caught out with.
I'm sure they have. I'm sure.
Thinking that they needed.
God, what a joke. Surely there has to Crazy. Be
It is a lot to have to hire all those individual items. So I felt very lucky that I wanted the Blonde Butler and that they provided that service too. So highly recommend trying to find a caterer that does the same. Yeah.
So Erin, you mentioned before, you know, you'd saved this venue. It was on your list. You knew it was beautiful. All the online pictures are beautiful, of course, as well. But it's quite, for those who don't know what Summerlees is and the style of venue it is, can you describe for them sort of what style of venue it is, and then how did your wedding and your theme and your dress code and everything kind of transpire from there?
Yeah, of course. So what drew me to Summerlees is the big, beautiful house that is on site. So you don't get use of the house, but it is the most stunning backdrop. And to explain it would be a beautiful two-story Victorian white house that faces a round, circular, manicured lawn that you can get married in front of. Beautiful vintage cars can drive around the lawn in front of the house. So it had that classic, I want to say, you know, a nod to Bridgerton, which may have been my friend's theme too. it all kind of tied in really beautifully. And then the most stunning thing about the venue is that there's these little pockets throughout the gardens that you can't see when you walk in. So the beautiful poolside area is off to the side through like this overgrown forest. So there's hidden moments, and then where we had the dinner is in this garden room, what they call the garden room, and it's got overgrown vines climbing all the way through it, and old chandeliers hanging from the ceiling, and old dark wooden floorboards. It's just absolutely incredible, all the different spaces that they have on offer that you can use for your day. And also that garden room is the most stunning room that you can also have your ceremony in if it's raining too.
Oh, amazing.
Okay, so it's wet weather options. So where did you have yours? Where was your wedding? Like, where was it within the venue?
Yeah, we got really lucky. It was March and it was 26 degrees that afternoon.
Perfect.
So slightly warmer than we thought it would be. but it was beautiful. So we got married on the circular lawn in front of the house. So the house was the backdrop of our ceremony photos. And we used these pots that we found on site, and our florist did this beautiful, like, overgrown hydrangea moments coming out of the pots for our ceremony piece. But it was beautiful. We got married right in front of the house, and then we did the canapes by the pool, and then we dinner in the garden room, and then dancing back on the lawn under a big tent lit up with lights. So
I love that. It was great.
I love how you move guests. Like, you might speak to this too, Laura, but moving guests from one spot to the other, to the next. Do you think that's like a good flow for guests?
I think it depends on your guest number, and it depends on how far the pieces are around. If you've got the property for the day, then having everybody experience all those moments is really important.
Like, really beautiful touch points.
Yeah, I mean, you get the venue for a reason, right? And that's the biggest invoice across your desk. It's the first one. It's the one that dictates how everything else is going to flow for the day. So you want to try and show your guests what you fell in love with, you know?
Yes. And I thought we could do that. We got so lucky with the weather that we could use, you know.
You could use it all.
2 minute walk to each. Yeah. And they really got a surprise when they went into each new little space.
Gorgeous. Yeah. And when you do look at your photos, it's just like lots of blue and white and
yeah,
just like a really beautiful garden soiree party. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just really stunning. Yeah, it was really beautiful. So this is probably one of our top wanted to know questions from our audience. And this is a bit of a nitty gritty question about budgeting. So it's like often a concern. How did you kind of go about navigating your budget? And do you have any tips for our brides listening?
Absolutely. So we did a rough, like everyone does at the start of their wedding, a rough calculation, the start of the wedding planning, a rough calculation of how much we thought we would need. And look, I'm not going to lie, it did go above that. Not by a lot. I would say maybe 10% above what we originally planned. So we had a figure in mind, and basically I calculated how long it would take us to save it with the thought in mind that we would get a tiny bit of help from parents. We still paid for about 80% of it ourselves, so I knew this was on us sort of thing. And then I worked backwards. So I knew each month we had to put X away, and then that would align with when the invoices were due just before the wedding, and we'd be okay. We wouldn't be in debt. We wouldn't need to call mum and dad and say, hey, I need some money. You know, I planned ahead. So that meant that we could get married within about 15 months, and that put us around March 2023.
Do you know what, Erin? I think that is a stellar tip of advice to work out, once you get a price from a venue, work out what you think you'd like to invest, and then book a date with a manageable savings plan from there. I think that is spot on, especially for couples that are doing it without a planner. You know, my first conversation with couples is your budget, and I will sit down with you and say, this is your realistic expectation for your guest number, the style of wedding. You're not getting anything below this unless you're willing to compromise on a certain element. But if you're doing it yourself, that is an incredible tip for people to be able to give them an idea of what they might spend, but achieve it so that there's not like proper fights about money as it comes through the process as well, because that is a common thing that people fight about, is the cost of especially creative things. So florals, candles, stationery, like we might get it, but most of the grooms or there's always one person in a relationship that's like, mate, that is not worth it, or I don't understand that cost. So to not have to worry about those kind of conversations when it's just invoices dumped on you at certain times, and having a planning, a savings plan each fortnight or each week whenever you get paid, that's great. That's a great tip.
Thank you.
I don't think you find it as bad as what you picture it to be, because the invoices come through over 12 months. Yeah. So you can kind of actually plan. I mean, obviously, if you sit down at the start and plan your Excel spreadsheet and really map it out and how much people are costing, it's not like you're putting forward $80,000 at
tomorrow,
the start of the
correct,
12 months.
Yeah.
It's really, I found it like quite manageable if you and your partner set out a bit of a plan and saving to be, yeah, and you kind of drip fed invoices here and there across the 12 months. It's not so bad to kind of navigate. Yeah, it's not as daunting, and then you don't actually be like, oh, there's 80 grand, like goodbye, or there's $120,000. It kind of gets drip fed across those 12 months to however long you're planning, forward planning. It's not so scary, I suppose.
It wasn't without sacrifice, to be honest, because we spent less than 80,000, I can tell you. But I did forego a really expensive dress. I did forego a cake. I didn't do a videographer, but I was lucky my sister's a videographer, so that helped. What else did we do? James didn't have expensive suits or shoes, so we did compromise for sure. It wasn't just, I want to spend this and, you know, $100,000 later. We did have to pay back a lot of little things, but I think there were things that, you know, you don't notice on the day, and that you can, if you're smart or if you like a certain style, you can find cheaper ways of doing it.
And tell me where you said you find cheaper ways of doing it. So your dress was from Revolve, and it looked
stunning.
Amazing.
Stunning.
It looked like it was from, you know, a designer, handmade. So, and I had a friend also get hers from Revolve, and she looked amazing. So it was $800, your dress, I think.
$800.
And then you spent $500 to alter it.
I did.
And were people really impressed with that? I'm sure you got a lot of a good, like, how did you go? Why did you decide to go? Was it just like merely that you found a dress that you really loved, or?
Yeah. Well, I tried some on. I did the whole bridal shopping moment, and I just couldn't swallow spending $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 on dresses that were absolutely stunning, but I would wear for a couple of hours and then change into a second dress anyway, because I knew I wanted to do that. So for me, it was also never about the dress. There's some brides out there that it is all about the dress, which I completely respect. But for me, it was about the venue, it was about the photographer, and it was about the mood of the day than it was having a Stephen Khalil dress.
And it looked just as amazing. Because you had like other things, like you obviously invested money in really good food, but also you had like a live band, I think you said, that you found from Bondi. So that's sets a bit of like a vibe, doesn't it?
It does.
And people don't really remember, like, you know, dress is a dress, I think, to a lot of the wedding guests, as bad as that is.
And there's so many out there now online. There are so many places where you can go and find a beautiful dress. And if you spend a few hundred dollars on a good tailor, which I found just through recommendations, they pull it in tight so it fits the body. They alter the length so it's not dragging on the floor. Mm-hmm. And that makes it look expensive. The tailoring elevates it. So it goes from looking like a dress you bought online that arrived in a brown box to something stunning on the day. So I did splash out on shoes. I bought some Manolos, which elevated it a little bit. But for me, I was more than happy to save thousands on an $800 dress. And that's a tip I would recommend to a lot of brides, is you don't need a super expensive dress to look beautiful at your wedding.
Yeah. Priorities, you know, what's important to you and your partner is the most important thing to spend your money on, I think.
Yeah.
You know, what you remember. So because you mentioned earlier, you know, you paid for the majority of your wedding yourself, you did things that some people would just assume is a rite of passage, where going to multiple wedding dress locations and doing try-ons and purchasing solely from there. So you've done things, you know, a little bit differently along the process. Did you include many DIY elements, because it's a DIY venue? Did you outsource everything to all vendors, or did you include some things that you guys made or sourced or did yourselves?
Yeah, for sure. So the first thing that comes to mind is my parents made our bonbonniere, which was a beautiful little candle. My mum makes candles just as a hobby, so it was a really nice touch to have something handmade by the family as a little gift for everyone to take home, and to be able to for them to keep using too, rather than something edible or whatever that would go off. This could sit in their bathroom or on their desk and they could burn it, and it was more a gift with longevity, I guess. So that was a hit. Everyone loved them. Some people forgot theirs and other people took two or three home. So that's mainly the main handmade thing we did. I had a girlfriend who's a graphic designer do all our stationery, which was amazing. We still paid for beautiful printing to give it that nice tactile feel. But I think having a couple of creative friends definitely helps on the day.
Friends with benefits.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Is there stuff that you would do that you included in your wedding day? Would you do anything differently? I know that, you know, you picked an outdoor venue, you risked the weather, it turned it on for you. So super lucky, because that is not always the case, of course. But in hindsight, did that choice of doing a garden wedding put stress on you? Would you do it differently? Or was there anything in the process that you sort of think, oh, you know what? If there's a next time, that would not be happening next time.
I think, of course, if you're planning to have your wedding outside, you are always going to have that niggling feeling, what if it rains, what if it rains, what if it rains? And I can't lie, I did all the way right up until the week of the wedding. But what gave me comfort is that my venue had a really beautiful wet weather option. So my advice to any brides wanting to have an outdoor wedding is don't hate the wet weather option, because I actually had one of my closest girlfriends got married at Summerlee as well, not long after me, and it did rain on her wedding day. However, she got married in the garden room with candles lit and the fireplace on. It was absolutely stunning. So I think that would be my advice, is I wouldn't change it purely for the fact that I liked my wet weather option, and I would recommend brides do the same, or soon to be brides do the same. What I would change is one thing is I would have refreshments during the ceremony because it was 26 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
People were a bit thirsty, which we didn't anticipate, because the Southern Highlands is usually a bit cooler and our ceremony was only 30 minutes. So it was, you know, we kind of thought people would just come in and then go straight to canapes where there was lots of drinks flowing. But in hindsight, I would have done even like sparkling water or something circulating during the ceremony. So that is my regret, I would say. But I guess weather is hard to plan for. So we wouldn't have thought it would be that warm in the sun at 4 p.m.
No, absolutely. And you never know. This is the hardest thing now, you know. You think 10 years ago and there were really defined seasons, and now it's like it can be 30 degrees or 40 degrees in March, or it can be 15. You just can't pick it. No, you don't. Not at all.
Well, when was mine? February, and it poured down. Like, remember? We lost Jan. I can't remember.
Oh, my God.
It was like storming the night before. You couldn't even see out the windows.
It was wild. So but, the week before.
Yeah, it was the worst weather.
Week before, I had like an outdoor wedding in the same area at a place called Baruna Plains. And we had a guest just after the ceremony, like almost faint because of the heat. And then 6 days later, we're saying, I don't think that hair and makeup can actually get to your venue because there's so much water over the road. Remember that? They were like, oh my God. So you just don't know, right? And that was Jan. So it's like, you've just got it. You have just got to roll with it.
So yes, always have plan B and be happy with your plan B. Our final question is, having navigated through wedding planning, do you have any advice for soon to be couples?
Yes. For me, what made wedding planning not very stressful was not overwhelming myself with too many options. I think it's really easy to want to see every photographer that works in Sydney or every venue that's available on your weekend. You know, I think over-researching can overstimulate you and overwhelm you. So there is something special or something empowering about finding something, liking it, and locking it in if it works for you and it's in line with what you're hoping to achieve. And that's what we did throughout. You know, I think the venue, I didn't look at any other venue. I locked in Summerlee the first time I saw it because I loved it so much. So that helped that process be really smooth and not stressful, because I was happy to book them as I liked them. So my tip would be, don't feel like you have to see everything out there, because you'll spend months worrying over options and I think often come out more confused. Once you like something and you've seen their work, if it's a vendor, or you've seen the venue and it's absolutely beautiful and it's in your budget and you like it, I think for me, just lock it in and let your wedding evolve from there.
Mm. You have been pockets of advice this conversation, Erin, and it's so good, because I think that, you know, this is why we started the podcast in the first place, is to give couples aspirational ideas, but also to be like, this is the reality, and it can come from me as a planner any day of the week, but, you know, it's almost like sometimes hearing your parents tell you what to do, right? So it's nice to come from, you know, others to give them these pieces of advice that, hey, this is what you need to focus on, because this is all that's important. You know, your most important suppliers, did you have any trouble in locking them in when you went through the planning process? Were they one of your like first things because that was so important?
Yes. So the venue obviously was my first one that I locked in immediately. And then I knew photography was super important to me and caterer. So I locked those three in within the first, I think, I want to say 4 months that we got engaged. And also that provided a lot of relief once that was done, because for me personally, they were super important. For some people, it might be the band and the florist. So the ones that are your most important, focus on them first and then work your way through the list. That definitely helped me and meant that because I was locking them in so far ahead, I got what I wanted. So Megan Kelly, our beautiful photographer who came down from Queensland, she was available, and it all just worked out really well. And I've already mentioned the Bond Butler, who were incredible. So for me, those three vendors made the day what it was. So focusing on booking them first really helped not be stressed about getting who I wanted.
Well, Erin, thank you so much for joining us on the pod. Thank you for your advice. It was great to chat, and congratulations.
Thanks so much. So good to meet you.